This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are talking Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. The Hallows. Chapters 7 and chapters 8. The Will of Albus Dumbledore and the Wedding. In these chapters, Scrimgeour be tripping over a snitch.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's a lot. Yes.
Scrimgeour be tripping, and we get a nice happy wedding before all hell breaks loose. As you astutely predicted, because you have been paying attention ever since book four.
Yes, yes, exactly. Everything, what goes up must come down, I guess.
Indeed. And I made a bit of a whoopsie in reading for this because I was listening to the audiobook. So I just start with chapter 8 and then I start reading chapter 8, listening to chapter 8, chapter 9. Oh, I'm ready. And then I thought, wait a minute, we never end on a odd number. And then I'm like, I didn't read chapter 7.
Oh, no. Well, you've read these many times before.
No, but so. I went back and I listened to it. So like I am fully prepared with many notes, you know, but I was just today, you know, going through my work and I'm like, oh my god, I read the wrong chapters. In our history of like 70 plus episodes by now, that's the first time I've ever made that mistake.
I'm honestly surprised I haven't done it yet. I probably will. But I also, this is my first time reading it, so I'm sure that helps a little bit. Also, apologies for my voice. I can't help it. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have not tested positive for COVID, so.
Anyway, but I did reread it. So yes, so we begin with chapter 7. The Will of Albus Dumbledore. And didn't in our last episode you made some mention of the picture of Harry and Ginny on the front?
It looks like the cover of a romance novel, yes. Yeah, I like the cartoon cover romance novels, and romance readers will know those are, that is no illusion. Those can be pretty raunchy. And so, yeah, it's very romance novel-y.
There is, what is it, a podcast or like some podcast or blog, something, it's called Potterotica.
Oh my gosh, okay.
And again, I don't know whether they read like fanfic smut or like, I don't know what the hell they do, but I just remember seeing the advertisement for it where it's just, again, the very typical like raunchy cover of the muscular guy is Harry and who knows who is he's paired with.
Oh, anyway. How funny. That's hilarious. We're borderline on this little image, but not quite that Fabio far.
Yeah. Anyway. So, we begin on the morning of July 31st, which means it is Harry's birthday.
He's turning 17.
Woo! Yeah, this ain't no birthday, just any birthday. This is 17, which means he can perform magic.
Yeah, gets rid of the trace, which I think is a funny, I don't know, that's just a funny thing to say. And I think I've heard people say that, like, out in the world. And I'm like, is that a Harry Potter reference? So, now I know.
Well, I'm sure there are certain sects of society who think the government is tracing them. Like, or there was one point in the pandemic where anti-vaxxers were saying, like, we should call ourselves purebloods. And it's like, those were the bad guys.
Yeah, that was some nonsense. There was a lot of that, but that was especially ridiculous.
Yep. And Harry's so ecstatic that he summons his glasses with magic, even though they're only a foot away.
I mean, I would too. Can you blame him? No. I think I also forget that they can't, like, those simple things they couldn't do until they turned 17. So that is quite the gift.
Indeed. And so, and Harry, during all this, like, he was mumbling in his sleep, and he was specifically saying the word Gregorovitch.
Yeah, right.
And he's like, and Harry's like, who is Gregorovitch? And Ron's like, the fuck I know, you were the one mumbling it in your sleep.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not a name that they've, but they, he, Ron is kind of like, well, maybe it's somebody, you know, maybe it's this person. Somebody on the Chudley Cannons.
Yeah, so Ron suspects possibly, again, a Quidditch player, but Harry's just like, I think Voldemort's looking for him. Poor book.
Yeesh. Yeah, bad news.
Mm-hmm. And then, so Harry, yeah, so after his glasses, Harry sent Ron's possessions flying around the room, causing Pigwidgeon to wake up and flutter excitedly around his cage. Pigwidgeon is so adorable. Why can't I have a Pigwidgeon in life?
Right, and we need to be nice to Pigwidgeon because we've already lost one owl, so, like, let's just make sure Pigwidgeon sticks around, please, for my sake.
Yep. And then, and Harry gets his birthday present from Ron, which is a book. Bit of a departure from tradition, isn't it? But what kind of book is it?
12 Failsafe Ways to Charm Witches. Well, so two things. This explains a lot of how he's been acting, for one. The second, there was, like, in the early 2000s, some TV show on VH1, and it was all about, like, teaching guys how to talk to women. And I swear that guy wrote a book. He used to wear, like, this big black hat. He was a total weirdo. I could not remember his name or the name of the show, but I was like, I was looking for it earlier today. I was like, I've got to remember that. So if anybody remembers it, please tell me. It was like The Player or something. It was ridiculous. But anyway, Ron is kind of like basically picked up that guy's book.
Yeah. And yeah, it's pure gold. 5 Failsafe Ways to Charm Witches. You'd be surprised. It's not all about wand work either. And I'm like,
oh my God, the innuendo. Right. I know. It's like, good Lord.
You know, so, you know, naturally when we think about, when we hear a title like that, like, because there's been a lot more studies recently about, again, the, you know, about incels, you know, online, the dark web, all the male, you know, all the misogyny and, you know, chauvinist and misogynist that goes on in the bowels of the internet and how they feed off of each other. And, you know, some of them, you know, some scholars have, like, separated them into, like, their own set, like of all the female women haters, there are, like, 3 main subcategories, because one of them are incels who bemoan about their lack of connection and, you know, relationship status with women. And then there are kind of what you were suggesting, the pickup artist community, which is...
That's the name of the guy. Sorry. It's called the pickup artist. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So he... Again, I like to think that Ron's book is not super rooted in, like, malice. It's just, like, how to be more emotionally intelligent because, as a man, you're not trained to do so.
Yeah.
I like to think that it's a more innocuous, you know, type of book and more of that mind, because the pickup artist community, they are super gross, where they literally try to manipulate and put... try to create this weird environment where they put the woman down just so the woman will be crave more, like, their approval, like, some really screwed up, fucked up shit that it's all about diminishing you know, a woman's, like, self-worth and, you know, making them the only one in control and, like, you know, lots of gross stuff.
There's a book by Robert Greene. I think he wrote The Art of War or something. No, he didn't write The Art of War. It's something like the... Anyway, he wrote a book called The Art of Seduction, and it's essentially like, okay, I have it. I've read bits and pieces of it, but I remember reading an article around the time it came out saying basically it was teaching people how to be emotionally manipulative. And I was like, I mean, I don't know. I haven't read the book. Is that what
if it's the same book we're talking about, The Art of Seduction, I remember it being... It's trying to justify itself, the book, by saying that people want to be seduced.
Mm-hmm. It's probably on my other bookshelf, but yeah.
I probably got rid of mine at some point in one of my purges out of embarrassment. But honestly, I liked the book, but not for like the actual like manipulative, because what that book did was did very detailed historical anecdotes and examples, which I liked for the history part, not making a judgment on whether that was like good behavior or bad behavior, or just like reading about how those specific phenomena came into being, not so much about this is a manual for how you should do this.
Right. I was in my bachelor's life, was not like I'm a bachelor, but like in my Bachelor of Human Services, took a lot of like relationship and human sexuality classes. So I was like very fascinated by that. And the pickup artist, whose name I couldn't figure out, but the same thing, the history, it's talking about like Casanova and Cleopatra and different appeal of certain historical figures.
And then who was it? The woman who broke Nietzsche's heart. I distinctly remember that chapter.
I may have not gotten that far, but.
Which wasn't Nietzsche in funny. Love with his sister.
maybe, I don't know. Gosh, now I'm going to have to go dig it. It's probably.
Although that's not so shocking now, because we are in a post-Hochti world.
Yeah, people are weird. People are fine with all kinds of things at this point. Yeah.
Or was it Lord Byron who had the thing with his sister? I can't remember.
That's like a theme of the past. Like you got something with your cousin or your sister. I don't know. It's weird.
So anyway, total side tangent. Again, I like to think that this is a more innocuous, like how to communicate, because no one taught you how to communicate, because we are living under the parameters of the patriarchy.
Well, and this is also a pre like incel. I mean, it was probably happening, but it wasn't really brought to the surface, because when I went to look up that book today, all I found was books about like how to be an alpha, you know, stuff like that.
About Rod's book. I'm not talking about that book.
Right. No. Yeah. This, his book is like, probably pretty innocent compared to what is out there today, you know, with so much talk about incels and alphas and all that stuff.
Speaking of which, I just had to watch a video essay about all the crap Megan Thee Stallion got after, you know, because she apparently got shot by. About this. I'm just not in hip hop, and that's not R&B. That's not my genre. So the whole essay was talking about like basically this boys club, that even though there was evidence that she got shot, she still got so much crap from Snoop Dogg and like the others who are like the boys club of like hip hop Hollywood. And then finally she won both her court case and court of public opinion.
I didn't really know a lot about that.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that was going on. But anyway, I digress.
So he got a pretty just innocuous book about like basically how to be a gentleman
how to be a gentleman and how to, you know, be emotionally intelligent.
Right. Good for him. He's passing on the love to Harry.
Yeah. And so they go downstairs. Arthur's already at work. Miss Weasley tells him, you know, Arthur says, wishes you a happy 17th. And Molly gives him, Harry, a gift of a silver watch. And it is the tradition, apparently, in Wizarding Society that you give a wizard a watch when they come of age. And Ron's was brand new, but the one that she gives Harry belonged to her brother, Fabian.
Well, that's pretty emotionally charged gift, then.
Mm-hmm. And Harry just hugs her and tries to just put so much into that hug.
Yeah.
Which it shows a level, you know, I was crapping on Molly Weasley a lot in terms of her, like, again, this idea that motherhood, the madness of motherhood, you know, if you will, in terms of not being able to be pragmatic about, again, your child or your children are at the center of this war and stuff. But at least here she has the emotional intelligence, and people have, I'm not the first person to make note of this, of she understands Ron, her son Ron, enough that he's always had hand-me-downs and he's always felt overshadowed, so she makes the effort to give him a new watch so that it's something of his own. Whereas with Harry, who doesn't have family, she gives him an heirloom, and that is more, and that means more to Harry, and she knows it wouldn't have landed the same way on Ron as it does with Harry, and so she's smart enough to be like, I'm going to give the new watch to Ron, and I'm going to give Harry my brother's old watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she has a level of emotional intelligence, you know, underlying some of her, like, kind of silliness is definitely overshadowed by her kindness,
yep,
and thoughtfulness.
And so we go through the birthday presents. Hermione gives Harry a new sneakoscope.
Lovely.
Bill and Fleur get him an enchanted razor.
Probably helpful.
Fred and George give him an enormous box of the latest Weasley's Wizard Wheezes merchandise.
Which is probably worth a lot, given the information we have on the Weasley brothers here.
Yep. And then after all these presents, Ginny asks Harry to come into her room. what'd you think? What'd you think of this as you're like, reading it?
I'm like, good Lord, child. Like, she's pretty... I didn't think it was going to go super far. Like, this is still a book for children. It's not a romance novel.
This ain't Court of Thorns and Roses, where we've broken the sex barriers of YA.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I figured it was something romantic, but so it was apparently very lovely kiss between Harry and Jenny. Good for them.
Yeah. The one thing I make note of is... they're having their little romantic exchange, and he's chanced to glance at her. She was not tearful. That was one of the many wonderful things about Ginny. She was rarely weepy. I take issue. Like, you could interpret it as very innocuous of Harry thinking, like, you could read it charitably of Harry thinking to himself, I suck at comforting people. It's my weakness that I don't know how to be that emotionally intelligent. You could read it that way, that, you know, it's convenient for me that I know I'm really shitty at this when I should be good at it, and therefore I'm not called upon to do it. Or you could read the less charitable version of, oh, Ginny's, that's the problem. On general principle, I really like Harry and Ginny as a couple. The problem I take issue with, especially in this reading, is Ginny is shown to represent the cool girl stereotype, that she isn't like the other girls, but at the same time, she's still hot enough and sexually appealing enough to the point that she isn't desexualized like Hermione in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. No, I thought that I was more frustrated with it than I mean, like you said, charitably, you could look at it one way, but I was like, okay, she's, you know, that it's the whole cool girl thing, and that's and it's fine that she's that way, but it's annoying when you have, like, put one on a pedestal and kind of not the other.
He had sometimes thought that having six brothers must have toughened her up, and I'm just
Blech. The wording there, that's gross. And dated.
it's so dated and
because you would never say the reverse, probably, would you? It was six sisters and one son. Would you say that, like, softened him? Yeah, I wonder if people would say that.
Yeah, so that's not great. And especially, I don't know, that specific wording, because it makes, there's a lot of, lots of anti-trans rhetoric going on about in the culture wars that are currently waging around. And one of the things I keep hearing, you know, from some of these anti-trans people is that, why can't tomboys just be tomboys? Like, why, like, them complaining, like, why do you have to, quote unquote, identify or change your sex or whatever? Why can't you just be your assigned birth one and just, like, stuff of the opposite sex? Why don't you want to settle for that? So I just started thinking about that stuff as well, and I'm just like, bleh.
Yeah, they just don't understand. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, because I had a friend who was very much a tomboy. And so when it came out that they transitioned to the opposite, you know, to the other sex, I was not shocked in any way, shape, or form. And I was like, good for him. This does not surprise me at all based on his interest, and clearly being a tomboy was not good enough for him, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And then there's the opposite, and there's some people that that is good enough for them, and that more likely is it's kind of right in the middle, interests on whatever side. It's dated thinking, transphobic, sheesh, who shall not be named, kind of. She loves that stuff. So
yeah, so you know, when I've made a point that if ever I get around to rewriting my fanfic about Harry's twin sister, I'm going to make a point that if ever there are like background characters with Lavender and Parvati, I'm going to show them that Lavender isn't just a bimbo. I'm going to show in my story that she has all these books in her room, like about the history of fashion.
There you go. Show that maybe, yeah.
Yeah, to show that she isn't just one-dimensional bimbo.
I think that's great. Yeah, this is, I don't know, this, I was like, this is pre or post Elle Woods. But I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, they have their little snog, as the Brits would call it.
Yeah, exactly.
To be interrupted by Ronald.
Of course.
And again, with all, again, these very dated, so we have this very dated, oh, not like other girls. We also have the very dated protective brother, where, because Ron is like, you know, Ron is like, you ditched her. What are you doing now messing her around? I'm not messing her around. She was really cut up when you ended it. So was I. You know why I stopped it. Yeah, but you go snogging her now and she's just going to get her hopes up again. She's not an idiot. She knows it can't happen. She's not expecting us to, blah, blah, blah. So again, I felt conflicted about, you know, because so long the protective brother is seen as an annoyance, but overall, you know, a good character. And, you know, not especially in the time this was written, not always people thinking more critically about why, you know, even if it's done with the best of intentions, it's still claiming some degree of ownership and possession over your female relatives.
Yeah, it definitely is. He definitely, which I don't know. Yeah.
Especially when that guy's the guy he's confronting is his best friend.
Yes.
Anyway,
it's a little naughty.
Yeah. So this chapter just made me think a lot about how we have evolved in regards to how we think about women, about gender, and just all the backlash that is, because 20 years, like a lot of this stuff has, at least in what I consider to be mainstream society, in terms of me living in a college town, what I consider is normal, people are like going up, banning books and going insane because they can't deal with the fact that they're being left behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
It's very upsetting too.
So who else? You know, we get some other people coming for Harry's birthday. Hagrid comes, Lupin and Tonks come, Charlie comes, and what do we got here? And Mrs. Weasley has made him a birthday cake that's the size of a beach ball, and it's a snitch, and I'm like, I want a beach ball sized snitch cake, god damn it.
Yeah, that's pretty lovely. Also, like, anymore though, like, everything's cake, you know, like,
you know, make... what that do you, that that's probably butterscotch buttercream icing. I love that.
That sounds, yeah, it sounds lovely.
Yep. And then, so yeah, they're going, you know, they're all having lots of fun, and then, oh, we get Hagrid's present, which is like some sort of, what is it? It's a slightly furry drawstring pouch, and it's like moleskin. If you can hide anything in there, and only the owner can like retrieve it from the bag.
A lot of these gifts, you know, are going to come in handy down the road. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, another thing about gender, Charlie comes up and it's like, how's Norbert? The Norwegian Ridgeback? We call her Norberta now. What, Norbert's a girl? Oh yeah, said Charlie. How can you tell, asked Hermione. They're a lot more vicious.
That's how I felt about that.
Yeah, which there was... Because again, there are those specific breeds of animals where like the female is considered quote-unquote more aggressive. Obviously spiders, you know, where they eat their...
Yeah, praying mantis too, yeah.
Yeah, praying mantis. Like again, there are various forms where the female is the quote unquote more aggressive one. And so Yeah, they're a lot more. I don't know. It's.
Well, I think it could be, you know, like biologically, like, yeah, you could take it like that way and just be like, okay, which is kind of, you know, could be perceived as kind of badass. But then there's also the other perspective, which is very sexist. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, women with their emotions, they be raging. So it's just, I feel like the intention was very sexist and, you know, PMSy, but maybe not. I don't know. It's a weird joke that I feel like probably wouldn't be made now.
No, I don't
And
think so either.
maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. So, and then we get a Patronus comes in the form of a weasel that he speaks with
Yeah.
Mr. Weasley's voice and it says, Minister of Magic coming with me. So, have we seen this before in the books yet where we can use Patroni as, you know, to carry messages?
I don't remember if
Oh,
we
yeah.
have.
Tonks says Tonks did it, you know, sending a message to
Oh.
school. So, and then Snape was shitting on her new Patronus.
Okay, yeah.
Although
Snape
I don't
shit.
think we directly heard it speak because she was the one casting it, sending it off. But yeah. So, but the important thing is the Minister of Magic is coming.
Yeah, and it's not like he's coming to wish Harry happy birthday. I mean, that's Harry's important, but it's kind of like not on that level.
Yeah, so Scrimgeour comes in, and at first he tries to separate the three of them and talk to them individually, and Harry's like, fuck that.
Yeah, he's like, we're beyond that. This is, you know, it's the three of us, so just deal.
Again, I in the Frosty Christmas episode in Half-Blood Prince, I just get this rereading especially, I get so irritated with Scrimgeour because he's acting like an amateur. He's acting for someone who is you may disagree with someone, you know, again, against their tactics, but he should have accepted, okay, I'm not going to get any help from Harry Potter at this point. You know, I'm not willing to negotiate, therefore I shouldn't be trying to do or, you know, do anything with this kid because there are certain things he brings that I cannot. There are certain compromises he wants that I can't do, and so there's no point engaging with him. So I get irritated with it's like I, you know, pick one. You don't get to be this unyielding and uncompromising, and yet still expect to glean something out of this kid.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Excuse me. He's kind of like he's delivering some interesting news, but I don't know. Their observations of when it's delivered was pretty interesting.
So ultimately, he is there because Dumbledore has left some things to all three of them, to Harry, Ron, and Hermione. He left certain items to them in his will.
Right, yeah. Which you kind of expected him to maybe leave Harry something, but like Ron and Hermione are kind of the wild card, you know, a little unexpected, at least for me.
Yeah. And so the last will and testament of Albus Percival Wolfric Brian Dumbledore.
So as soon as I heard, because I listened to it too, and as soon as I heard that, I was like, is that are those initials involved in this? And I couldn't, no, they're not, because he's got the long, crazy name.
Yeah, to Ron Bilious Weasley, I leave my Deluminator in the hopes that he will remember me when he uses it. So the Deluminator, you know, it like kind of looks like a silver cigarette lighter. And it kind of like can take away light and retrieve light. And so we first see the Deluminator in the very first chapter of the first book because Dumbledore, that's what Dumbledore uses to like, you know, to extinguish the street lamps when he's
Oh, okay.
taking baby Harry, you know, to the Dursleys.
Okay. I didn't remember that.
So yeah, so we've got the Deluminator. Dumbledore leaves that to Ron. Then to Miss Hermione Jean Granger, I leave my copy of The Tales of Beedle the Barb in the hope that she will find it entertaining and instructive.
Okay.
And during all this, Scrimgeour is asking Ron and Hermione, like, were you close to Dumbledore? Why would he give this to you? And they're like, fuck if we know.
Right. Yeah. It's and these are not, they're strange objects.
Yeah, and Hermione is crying when she's being given her book. And he's like, did you ever discuss codes? Because her book is written in ancient runes. Did you ever discuss codes or any means of passing secret messages with Dumbledore? No, I didn't. You know, if the ministry hasn't found any hidden codes in this book in 31 days, I doubt that I will. She suppressed a sob. So, you know, again, like it's interesting because I don't doubt that Hermione's like emotion is like ingenuine at this point. At this point, I think it is genuine that she's genuinely upset and frustrated by Scrimgeour's, attitude and this grilling. But also, it is a way to for him to deflect him and realize look at what an asshole you're being and how stupid you look, grilling this poor girl who just got a book from a guy who just died.
It's a little intense and a little because they already had the like, why did the ministry take a month to give this, or is that after this?
Yeah, that was before, because in essence,
Okay.
yeah, that was the limit. They legally could only hold it for 31 days because the only way they would legally have any right to it is if it was deemed dangerous. No, so Scrimgeour was just holding on to it as long as he legally could to try and decipher what Dumbledore was trying to convey to these three. To Harry James Potter, I leave the snitch he caught in his first Quidditch match at Hogwarts as a reminder of the rewards of perseverance and skill.
I mean, that's lovely, but you know there's more to it than that.
Yeah, and Scrimgeour knows it, and Scrimgeour is hoping something will happen when Harry touches the snitch because we get the, what was it? It's Hermione who explains it, that Hermione and Scrimgeour explain that,
Flesh memories.
flesh memories that not even the Maker touches a snitch with his bare hands. It's only first caught. It only knows human touch when it's been first caught by the Seeker that catches it. And so so Scrimgeour was hoping that the minute Harry touches this thing, something will happen or something will be hidden in it, but nothing happens.
I'm trying to remember.
And Harry's like, that was dramatic.
Yeah. The first human to touch that lays hand. Okay. So I guess by this and the fact that he touches and nothing happens, one would suspect that he was not the first one to touch it, right?
Put a pin in that.
Excuse me.
So Scrimgeour was so certain that like that something more valuable or something was going to happen and Harry wouldn't be able to hide it, but nothing did happen. And they're like, is that it then? And Scrimgeour's like, no. Dumbledore also left Harry the Sword of Gryffindor, but that is a historical artifact and that was not Dumbledore's to distribute out.
Yeah, that sounds very British of him, right? Like, let's just steal somebody's shit and just, oh, it's ours now. That's just too bad.
Why would you think Dumbledore wanted to give me the sword? Said Harry, struggling to keep his temper. Maybe he thought it would look nice on my wall.
Yeah, he's sassy, Harry. He's obviously pissed because, I mean, this is obviously something that could be helpful for him down the road, but that he doesn't have access to.
And Scrimgeour is like, was it because Dumbledore believed that only the sword of Godric Gryffindor could defeat the heir of Slytherin? Did he wish to give it you the sword, Potter, because he believed, as do many, that you are the one destined to destroy he who must not be named? Interesting theory, said Harry. Has anyone ever tried sticking a sword in Voldemort? Maybe the ministry should put some people on that instead of wasting their time stripping down deluminators or covering up breakouts from Azkaban.
Yeah, he's pretty pissed about all the nonsense surrounding all of this.
Yes. So is this what you've been doing, Minister? Shut up in your office trying to break open a snitch? People are dying. I was nearly one of them. Voldemort chased me across three counties. It killed Mad-Eye Moody, but there's been no word about any of that from the ministry, has there? And you still expect us to cooperate with you? Again, my thoughts exactly. Like, don't come to the table if you're not willing to relent on what this kid wants. If you need the kid that badly, then suck it up.
Right. And he's just kind of like expecting, I don't know, kind of an altruistic response from Harry when he continues to not get one. So kind of ridiculous.
Well, hey, if he wants to, he want if he wants to appeal to Harry's sensibilities in an altruistic manner, he needs to show to a certain degree that the ministry also behaves altruistically.
And he rem yeah, exactly. And he reminds them that they have not done that in the past, specifically with, good old what's her face in the I must not tell lies. Gosh,
Umbridge.
Pink Umbridge. Gosh, I couldn't think of her name. I can
Umbridge.
see her and I couldn't think of her. Yes, Umbridge. So he reminds him of that too.
Yeah, and Scrimgeour finally gets so pissed that he's poking his wand in Harry's chest and his It singed a hole in his t-shirt like a cigarette.
It's wild. It's also very Trailer Park of him.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Remembered you're not at school, have you? Said Scrimgeour, breathing hard into Harry's face. Remember that I am not Dumbledore, who forgave your insolence and insubordination. You may wear that scar like a crown, Potter, but it's not up to a 17-year-old boy to tell me how to do my job. It's time you learned some respect.
And then, Harry, it's time you earned it. I was like, oh, good for you.
Yep, and then Mr. and Mrs. Weasley come in after hearing the raised voices. You seem to think that the Ministry does not desire what Dumbledore desired. We ought to be working together. I don't like your methods, Minister, Harry, said Harry. Remember? For the second time, he raised his right fist to display Scrimgeour. It's the scars that showed white on the black of it, on the back of it, spelling, I must not tell lies. Scrimgeour's expression hardened. He turned away without another word and limped from the room. Yeah, because, again, I've always been kind of fuzzy. And I discussed this in the Frosty Christmas episode in Half-Blood Prince about how much or how little either Scrimgeour, Fudge, or the Ministry at large knew about how deplorable Umbridge was.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, because he didn't show that much shock, because again, even if you don't sincerely believe it, like in my politician mind, I'm thinking like, what? She did that to you? Oh, I'm so sorry. I will fire her at once.
Right, right. So yeah, this kind of gives,
But he can't bring himself to even feign that, because to feign that it shows like lack of weakness, even if he doesn't, you know, truly feel sorry about it, but not willing to show any sort of weakness and lack of knowledge on the Ministry's part.
Yeah.
So anyway, just, you know, Scrimgeour annoys me, but I can't be too annoyed with him because we know it's coming.
Yeah. 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 R.I.P.
Yep. And then finally, Scrimgeour leaves.
So they have some cake, but then they have a lovely little dinner, and then they discuss kind of like the things that were left to them by.
Yeah. So, because, you know, again, and they're thinking, like, why would the Deluminator be useful? Like, is there something more to it than just the light thing? And then with Hermione's gift, it's like, what are tales of Beedle the Bard? And Ron is like, you've never heard of them? So in essence, as we learn, the Tales of Beedle the Bards are the Wizarding World's version of the Grimm Tales, all the various children's stories and fairy tales. And Hermione's like, we didn't grow up with those stories, Ron. Harry and I know Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and Cinderella. And he's like, what is that, an illness?
Pretty silly of him, but... But yeah, I mean, Harry honestly probably doesn't know too much about those because he didn't really have much of a childhood. But
no, but and then finally they're thinking about the snitch, and Harry realizes that if this is the first snitch he ever caught in a match, then he did not catch it with his hand. He caught it with his mouth. So he basically goes to kiss the snitch, but nothing happens.
Yeah, right.
It's not a frog. It did not turn into a prince.
Dang, that's too bad.
But they realize that there is writing on the snitch. Dumbledore's writing.
Yeah,
engraved on it.
Yeah,
and all it says is five words: "I open at the close."
Yeah, what is that supposed to mean?
Do you have any thoughts or theories yet?
I am assuming if it's like. Okay, I'm trying to think back to when they were in the Ministry and that the veil. Mm-hmm. Like, well, he hasn't seen Sirius, though. I don't know. To me, it's like you have access to me in some capacity. You just have to figure out how to do it. Ooh, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe he's gonna like hold a seance or something. I don't know. But it's pretty cryptic. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then they go start complaining about, like, you know, obviously Dumbledore couldn't put in his will why he really wanted us to have these items, but they're all like, why didn't he just fucking tell us when he was alive?
Right, right. But of course, but I mean, I guess we don't get the impression that Dumbledore knew he was going to die at that night, right?
Yeah, we don't. Didn't. So, yeah, maybe he wanted to and didn't get the opportunity.
Maybe.
But I guess there's a sense that Dumbledore, we don't know when Dumbledore wrote this will or revised this will. So maybe this, you know, maybe this happened like several years ago, and there's maybe there was a play. I guess it's the question of, do we think that do we think that Dumbledore had revised this like several years ago, or at least some time ago, where he's like, I definitely know Harry, Ron, and Hermione need these items? Or was this something he did very, very quickly based on new information or whatever, and then he ends up dying?
That's a great question. I mean, it's kind of hard to, I don't know. I feel like it could go either way, mm-hmm. especially with the whole Snape thing, like, and the heat that was coming on, like, so I don't know. We'll find out, maybe. That's what I always say.
Yep. And then the chapter closes with them all going to bed, and that is that. And then we go transition to chapter 8, which is the wedding.
Dun, dun, dun. Marriage.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
So, here we go.
I'm just thinking, because I did not have a traditional wedding like this. Like, my husband and I just ran off to Rome. And then when I was going to my hairdresser, and she's like, oh yeah, we did this. She was my age. And it's like, oh yeah, we did the same thing. We ran off to Maui. I think it's both a financial reality, but also a cultural one. Like, why would you blow all this money on, you know, a wedding when you could like make a down payment for a house?
Yeah. Thankfully, I think more people are coming to that realization. I did not. I mean, I had a wedding that I enjoyed. So that's, and it was not like a big blowout with 300 people, because I would hate that, as Amy knows.
Because you hate people. So,
I was thinking about that the other day. It's like, I just need my space. So,
yeah. So anyway, so they're all at the marquee, you know, dealing with the wedding guest. You know, Harry is polyjuiced as Cousin Barney.
Yeah, I kind of didn't even think that was, until this happened, I was like, oh, well, of course, because, like, you know, Voldemort's, like, out there looking for him, so this would be a good place to find him. I don't know. I don't know how wedding announcements work in Harry Potter world, but
Moment. Gyro is crying again. Let's see if he'll come in and be quiet. All of Fleur's very attractive Vila cousins and Fred and George are falling over themselves for it.
Very nice. Lovely. Lovely to have hot family, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll look after them. Not so fast, Your Holiness.
Goodness. Oh, yeah, because of the ear. We still have that going on. I forget about that. Yeah.
Here, permettez-moi to assistez-vous.
Goodness. It's funny French.
Yep, and then we've got Lupin and Tonks. Lupin gave him a swift smile, but as they turned away, Harry saw Lupin's face fall into lines of misery.
I don't know what that's about.
Yes, got any theories on why Lupin is tripping?
No, I was like, is there a full moon about to happen? Otherwise, I have no idea. He's just got married, right? He should be happy.
Yeah, and we glazed over it in the chapter 7, but when the minister arrives, like, Tonks and Lupin immediately scatter. Like, they immediately jump the fence and, like, leave.
So it's known. Okay, let me think about this. So it's known that Lupin's a werewolf, right?
Yeah, it is. If it maybe wasn't super public knowledge, it certainly became public after he resigned from Hogwarts because Snape blabbed.
Yeah, because isn't there some sort of, like, rule that they can't get married, or maybe Tonks is pregnant? I don't know. That would be
I don't know if there's a rule that they can't get married. It's we do know that Umbridge passed legislation that makes it near impossible for Remus to hold down a job.
Okay, maybe they got some bills coming up. I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Yep. Sorry. And then we've got Hagrid coming in, who's taken up 5 seats and destroying them.
Nice.
And then we meet Luna's father, Xenophilius Lovegood.
Thank goodness, because he is just as weird as Luna is.
He is weirder, I think.
Yeah. Well, I guess she had to get it somewhere, right? So.
Yeah, well, because we don't know how weird her mother was. But Xenophilius is... It was just so disconcerting because, again, I was listening to the audiobook, and Jim Dale, the voice he used for Xenophilius Lovegood, and I had forgotten what kind of voice he chose, but it seems the exact same voice that he did for that woman, Hepzibah Smith, the one in the memory that...
Yes.
The one that Voldemort murders.
It was a bit confusing because I I mean, I knew I had heard him do a similar voice before, so yeah.
Or, yeah. No, well, that's not. It also could be similar to that Wilkie Trilos Tri-Cross Apparition instructor, but no, he was a little bit more, like, wispy. But no, yeah. The Hepzibah Smith and Xenophilus Lovegood, they, like, sound identical.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, so we get... So Ra, was it Luna, comes in, and she's just like, oh, hello, Harry. Like, she can just totally see through the Polyjuice and knows it's him.
Yeah, yeah, she's pretty... She said his expressions are what gave it away.
Mm-hmm. And again, I've been reading a lot of fan fiction lately, and I wouldn't say it's, like, lazy or, like, a shortcut, but there are a lot of fanfic authors when there's someone being in disguise or someone, like, you know, trying to act surreptitiously, and then Luna comes in and she just knows exactly what's going on, and it's awesome.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Yep. And then, like her father, Luna was wearing bright yellow robes, which she had accessorized with a large sunflower in her hair. Once you got over the brightness of it all, the general effect was quite pleasant. At least there were no radishes dangling from her ears. No, screw everyone's hatred. I want radish earrings just because of... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little judgy
there.
I have my
little toucan earrings. Luna can have her radish earrings. God damn it.
She can have whatever she wants. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Luna, my love, if you should feel any burgeoning talent today, perhaps an unexpected urge to sing opera or to declaim in Mirmish, do not repress it. You may have been gifted by the Gur Nimbles.
Like, again, weirdness, which is kind of their thing, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. And who do we got? We've got dear Auntie Muriel.
Man, this lady...
Who is the stereotypical...
Spilling a lot of tea,
the stereotypical... And there's the question of, was she always like this? Or is she, you know, using old lady privilege to just bitch and say whatever she wants now?
I'm gonna use it. I mean, the older I get, the more I can do that. It's pretty... Yeah, she goes full on. Pretty wild.
Yeah, and she's like, you know, she's talking about Fleur, and she's like, she's a good-looking girl, but still... French.
That British French animosity full display.
And then there's and what'd she say? She say, oh, there's the muggle born scrawny things.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got something to say about pretty much everybody.
Mm-hmm. And then oh, what is it? Oh dear, is this the muggle born? And then bad posture and skinny ankles.
Yeah, which is that's just kind of a strange observation, but that's fine.
Yep. And then they talk about, oh, yeah, she just told me my ears are lopsided, old bat. I wish old Uncle Bilious was still with us, though. He was a right laugh at weddings. Wasn't he the one who saw a Grimm and died 24 hours later, asked Hermione? Well, yeah, he went a bit odd towards the end, which is interesting because this reference is made going back to book 3 when they see, like, the Grimm, when it ends up being, you know, Sirius Black, and, you know, they talk about Uncle Bilious like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then what else happens? And who else shows up? A certain paramour.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Victor Crumb, which Ron is not thrilled about this.
No, he's not. And Hermione is very surprised because she did not know that Fleur had invited him. Which it makes sense that she does, because they all bonded by going through that harrowing going through dragons and other shit. So it's like, yeah, I want to invite my buddy who I had to compete with for in the death tournament.
Yeah, it does make sense. As I at first was like, did Hermione invite him? But that it does make sense after you kind of remember what they've been through.
And Ron's just like, how come you're here?
Always with the he didn't, I guess he needs to read that book again because he's a little still a little so.
Yeah, your friend is not pleased to see me, said Crumb as they entered the new now packed marquee.
Well, you'll be all right, Victor Crumb. He knows it too.
Yep. And then we get the whole ceremony, which I don't know, do we have any thoughts?
I don't remember from reading it it being anything super weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the thing you look out for. The only thing is, the very cute thing is, is Fleur was wearing a very simple white dress and seemed to be emitting a strong silvery glow. While her radiance usually dimmed everyone else by comparison, today it beautified everybody it fell upon. Ginny and Gabrielle, both wearing gold dresses, looked even prettier than usual. And once Fleur had reached him, Bill did not look as if he had ever met Fenrir Greyback.
Yeah, that was very sweet.
Yep. And then, let's see, all the vows. Declare you bonded for life. Blah, blah, blah. And blue, doo, doo. So we start to get into the reception. And I like this song, said Luna. And well, here's the part, you know. But the smile vanished from Ron's face at once. Victor Crumb had dropped into Luna's vacant seat. Hermione looked pleasurably flustered, but this time Crumb had not come to compliment her. With a scowl on his face, he said, "What was it?" There's a point where he sees Crumb and Ron is just like, "We're gonna dance."
Yeah. I'm trying to find that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that's Xenophilus Lovegood. He's the father of a friend. His tone indicated that they were not about to laugh at Xenophilus, despite the clear provocation. "Come and dance," he added abruptly to Hermione.
Good for him.
Yep. And Victor has an interesting line of questioning, because he's asking Harry, a.k.a. Barney, who that man mm-hmm. Lovegood. You know him well? "No, I only met him today." "Why?" Crumb glowered over the top of his drink. "Because," said Crumb, "if he was not a guest of Fleur's, I would duel him here and now for wearing that filthy sign upon his chest."
Oh, yeah. And it's Grindelwald's sign. Dun, dun, dun.
Grindelwald. That is Grindelwald's sign. Grindelwald, the dark wizard Dumbledore defeated? Exactly. Grindelwald killed many people. My grandfather, for instance. Of course, he was never powerful enough in this country. They say he feared Dumbledore, and rightly, seeing how he was finished. But this," he pointed a finger at Xenophilius, "this is his symbol. I recognize it at once. Grindelwald carved it into a wall at Durmstrang when he was a pupil there. Some idiots copied it onto their books and clothes, thinking to shock, make themselves impressive, until those of us who had lost family members to Grindelwald taught them better."
Some pretty intense feelings toward Mr.
Grindelwald. So Xenophilius is wearing this. So, in essence, this is kind of like... this is kind of a situation where we have this symbol that, you know, Harry highly suspects that probably Lovegood doesn't know what it really is. And it kind of makes me think of the fact that the swastika originally wasn't a original, you know, symbol that the Nazis created. They hijacked it because it, you know, it means something. I even forgot what it's technically called in Hinduism.
Yeah. I went to a yoga class and there was like this big tapestry and there was a swastika on it. And I was like,
yeah, but it was... which again, we get this. And so this should kind of just makes you think of like when you have a symbol like that, that was once upon a time positive or at the very least neutral, and it's been hijacked in such a way. How much do you work to try to, you know, like, is it fair to force the symbol to keep its negative connotation or what? Because, you know, the swastika, most people agree, yeah, we should like never use it again because like what it represents is so horrific. But you know, I find myself thinking about these things in with certain symbols in paganism, because there is, you know, I've been reading my stuff about white supremacy, and there is, while most of that intersects a lot with Christian nationalism, there's a good chunk of white supremacy that is not Christian based, but it's with what is it, Odinism, you know, with certain white supremacists, you know, religiously going the pagan route of worshiping like the Norse Scandinavian gods and traditional folkloric spiritual practices to glorify their own culture and their own sense of superiority. And so there are some symbols that they use that other Odinists that are not white supremacists would use in that debate of like how far do you go to save a symbol.
I think it's much more complicated. I mean, issue not now is what I'm trying to say. Like, I think there you used to have like your swastikas, and that's like, oh, everybody knew that was bad. But then I feel like now there are things that, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but that you just might have on or something, and, you know, the internet has all of a sudden decided, like, it's, you can unknowingly wear something that is symbolic of, I don't know, you know, something negative, just kind of unknowingly, dependent on the group. I mean, I feel like a swastika, that's pretty obvious, but I also feel like there are little signals to different, that different people use to, like, you know, kind of like nod to each other in public, but some people don't know that that's what they're doing. You know, I'm trying to think of one in particular, like a clothing brand or something. And people are like, oh, that means you're like a white supremacist because you wear these type of shoes. I remember for a while, and it's like, no, I just, that just happened to be what I liked, you know,
yeah,
I wasn't buying. But then there are some people that are buying them for that reason. It's a very weird time.
Yeah, because the way this sort of concept conflict comes into my life is, of course, you know, the pentacle, which, yeah, if it's forward facing with the fifth tip on top, then, like, that, again, that's considered the quote unquote normal. But if it's upside down with the two of the tips pointing up, then that's what's been traditionally used for Satanism and other demonic stuff.
Yeah,
does your t-shirt have the pentacle on it?
I'm trying to figure out, not this one, but there is one that I have that I don't remember if what side it's on. Anyway, I have a lot of like metal shirts, so, mm-hmm, you know, that's just, and I don't care either way, but yeah, but that's interesting because I always worry about that. I'm like, I'm not like a Satan worshiper. It's just a shirt that I think is cool. So.
Sorry,
but I'm obviously sending a message to some people, I guess. Oh well.
Yeah, because I wear these sometimes I worry because I do have a pair of really huge pentacle earrings, and I'm always worried. Even though I'm in a college town, I am in Indiana, so I always worry that there's going to be that one random person that's going to give me shit for it.
They just need to get educated.
And so, anyway, sidebar. So anyway, so we've got this, you know, Crumb thinking, how dare this man basically be wearing a swastika? I'm pissed. And he's drumming his wand against his thigh threateningly. And when Harry sees this, he immediately screams, Gregorovich.
I don't even remember what that is.
Yeah, and Crumb's like, God. What about him? He's a wand maker. I know that. He made your wand. That's why I thought... Quidditch, Crumb. So, yeah, so we started, like, the last chapter where he was thinking about Gregorovich, yes, and somehow he connected Gregorovich with Quidditch, and all through the, you know, in his memory, he realizes that when Ollivander came in fourth year to check all their wands, Ollivander made the comment to Crumb, oh, you have a Gregorovich wand, and that's why Harry thought of Quidditch, because he thought of Crumb, the seeker, the Bulgarian seeker.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, did you ever think we were gonna just this throwaway name Ollivander says in book four, did you ever think this was gonna come back?
No, I mean, but I should know better at this point. It's like something that just seems like a throwaway, it's obviously gonna make its way back to the end. That's funny. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's see. So it's, yeah, like, he's a wand maker. What's he doing now? It's like, I don't know. He retired. I was one of the last people to get a wand from Gregorovich.
Mm-hmm. All these little Easter eggs are being planted right now. That's what I think is happening.
So Harry's thinking to himself, so Voldemort was looking for a celebrated wand maker, and Harry did not have to search far for a reason. It was surely because of what Harry's wand had done on the night that Voldemort had pursued him across the skies. The Holly and Phoenix Feather wand had conquered the borrowed wand, something that Ollivander had not anticipated or understood. Would Gregorovich know better? Was he truly more skilled than Ollivander? Did he know secrets of wands that Ollivander did not?
We don't know, because then Crumb decides to get distracted by Jenny.
Yeah. This girl is very nice looking, Crumb said. She is also a relative of yours? Yeah, said Harry, suddenly irritated. And she's seeing someone, jealous type, big bloke. You wouldn't want to cross him. Crumb grunted. What? is the point of being an international Quidditch player if all the good-looking girls are taken?
I mean, Crumb, you're going to be fine. You got plenty of cousins there to check out, so just move on. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting because, again, in book four, I'm always a pro Hermione Crumb shipper because in my headcanon, Crumb is actually extremely smart and extremely intelligent. But here he's just playing off to Harry like, oh, the good ones are always taken. But we know he liked Hermione because she didn't give a crap about.
Right.
Yeah, well, right. And I think that's part of it. I think he's
just being jealous.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a little conversation between Harry and Elpheus Doge, the wizard who wrote Dumbledore's obituary.
Yeah. This gets pretty interesting.
Yes. Harry's like, Elpheus, I don't know whether you saw the interview to Rita Skeeter. Oh, yes, I saw it. Well, in that interview, Reader Skeeter hinted that Professor Dumbledore was involved in the dark arts when he was young. Don't believe a word of it, Doge said at once. Not a word, Harry. Let nothing tarnish your memory of Albus Dumbledore.
That was all fine and good. But then we have a kind of a party crasher coming to the conversation.
Yeah, we got a party crasher in Auntie Muriel, and she is not, she ain't spilling the teacup, she's spilling the whole teapot.
Oh my gosh, yes she is. You everybody knows there's somebody like this, and somebody, at least in my family, there's somebody like that that just wants to sit there and just tell everybody's business, and it's like, that's why nobody tells you their business. So
we learn a lot from dear Auntie Muriel. So apparently there's the sense of, you know, when Ariana's sister died, and the fact that no one ever saw her until they brought the coffin out.
Yeah.
And we get a lot, and Muriel explains, like, you know, it was heavily, you know, she suspects, and a lot of other people suspect, that Ariana was a squib. And Doge is like, no, that's not true. She was ill. And she's like, she never came out. And then Muriel explains that, you know, in those times, you know, probably even less progressive than the 90s sexism.
Yeah, yeah.
even more prejudice and stuff, that, you know, typically, you know, squibs were expected to sort of go to Muggle schools and integrate into the Muggle world, but Muriel is playing it off as Kendra Dumbledore, Dumbledore's mother, was far too proud for that and just kept her in the house. And that even for all that social pressure and that, you know, shame, like keeping her, holding her hostage, even at that time would have been excessive.
That's so it reminds me of this true crime story. This woman named Blanche Monnier or something like that. And she was very beautiful, and her, she was supposed to get married. Her mom didn't want her to get married, and she was locked in an attic for 25 years. So I'm wondering, I mean, I know we're making kind of a parallel to Harry here, but the kind of...
Harry is making a parallel to Harry.
Exactly. But this woman did not get out. It was like she got out when she was dead, finally.
Yeah. And so Elpheus just keeps insisting that she was ill. You know, she had a very delicate constitution, blah, blah, blah. And Muriel's like, bullshit, my relative Lancelot was a healer at that time. They never, ever admitted or had any sort of visits or any sort of relationship with the Dumbledores in regards to Ariana for anything medical whatsoever.
Yeah. So like, this is like a pretty big skeleton in Dumbledore's closet.
Yeah. Now, if Kendra hadn't died first, I'd have said that it was she who finished off Ariana. So in essence, and then Muriel is speculating that maybe Ariana tried to escape, and in her escape attempt, she killed Kendra Dumbledore.
Oh my.
And then ultimately, you know, Ariana dies. And we find out that Aberforth kicked Albus's ass at the funeral.
Yeah.
And broke his nose.
And he just kind of like, he didn't fight back, right? He just kind of
Because everyone knows that Albus Dumbledore could have wiped the floor with him, but he just sits and takes it.
Yeah. Well, you don't let that happen if there's not something that's gone wrong, you know? Like if you don't feel.
Yep. And I'll tell you something else. I think Bathilda has spilled the beans to Rita Skeeter. All those hints in Skeeter's interview about an important source close to the Dumbledores. Goodness knows she was there all through the Ariana business, and it would fit. Bathilda would never talk to Rita Skeeter. Bathilda Bagshot, the author of A History of Magic? Yes, a most gifted magical historian and an old friend of Alvis's. Quite gaga these days, I've heard. If that is so, then it is even more dishonorable for Skeeter to have taken advantage of her. And no reliance can be placed on anything Bathilda may have said.
I don't know.
And then, on top of everything else, Harry finds out that the Dumbledores lived in Godric's Hollow.
Yeah. Then, and they, so like Harry's realizing all these things, like all these connections that they had that Dumbledore just didn't mention.
No, just never talked about. And again, thinking of himself being locked away in a cupboard because he was magical.
Right. And then,
And
you know, the implication that Albus probably felt so terrible that that's why he kind of felt such affection toward Harry, maybe.
yep. And then Hermione comes on. She's like, she can't dance anymore, slipping off one of her shoes and rubbing the sole of her foot. I can relate to that as a woman. Yep. And then Hermione realizes that something is wrong with Harry, but before Harry can utter a word, a bright, silvery Patronus comes in the form of a lynx, and it speaks in the loud, deep, slow voice of Kingsley Shacklebolt. The ministry has fallen. Scrimgeour is dead. They are coming.
And then I couldn't read anymore.
Yep, and then you couldn't read more.
So,
Although I read more, even though I
yeah.
wasn't supposed to. And so I was just like,
There
okay.
we go. Wow. So like it, as suspected, it you start on a high, everybody's getting married, whatever, but then it descends pretty quick.
Right. Can I see the cover of your Deathly Hallows edition? Oh, okay, nice.
Dun, dun. All my note
So,
cards in there too.
excuse me. So, let us begin with our first exercise, Gothic Geek Out.
Dumbledore's secret sister, right? That's pretty and locked in the attic. Very Jane Eyre, my favorite
Your
gothic
favorite
novel to
that you will
reference.
never cease in
Always.
referencing?
Yeah, that I don't really like, it's not my favorite gothic novel either. But that is pretty much kind of like the family secrets, which keeps being a running through theme through Harry Potter and then also Gothic literature.
Because the shame of, because obviously they're not the only, Jane Eyre, the Rochester's mentally ill wife isn't the only one. Like, I'm trying to think of what are, there seems to be a lot of, confusion about, so why was Ariana locked up? Again, they're speculating that she was a squib, and it was just the shame factor. And I'm trying to think of other forms of Gothic literature of what was the reason for locking someone away. Because in a lot of Gothic literature, be it even like Woman in White by Wilkie Collins, locking someone up is a big thing, whether it's in the house physically and like keeping it a secret, or whether you cart someone off to an asylum. And unfortunately,
Right.
a lot of times female relatives were locked away or deemed insane, because not because that they were genuinely mentally ill, but because that they had some sort of stake in an inheritance, and so the men around them trying to make sure that they got the house or got the money or got the whatever would make it would, basically stage that these women are crazy and force them into an asylum so that they would be deemed, unfit to, make decisions, and so therefore they basically get cheated out of their inheritance.
Yeah. Gosh, I just thought of something, another one. But I was thinking about the yellow wallpaper, but that's not, I mean, that's not a forgotten what relative. That's just like a woman that's kind of, you know, secluded for different reasons because people think she's insane, but she's not. I'm sure we could think of many more, and I always do this. I always look at my bookshelf and I'm like, where's the damn book that makes me that I can reference,
Make an allusion to.
and I can't find it. Yeah. What about you? What was your
Yeah, mine, yours was better than mine because I actually struggled with this. Because I think I struggled with it because I read the next chapter and I feel like I was like siphoning myself off. No, I can't use those examples. And this one was near the end of the chapter. So I was like inappropriately compartmentalizing it as like a no touch. But the one I chose was just the reading of Albus's will, because so much of Gothic literature, the catalyst for going into the manor house is someone has died and there's a reading of the will. And sometimes the reading of that will is in the Gothic story itself, and that it's highly contentious and you see people are pissed that they didn't get what they were expecting to inherit. And then other times it's just it's just kind of glossed over of, okay, this has happened, and in the will you got the haunted house.
The Castle of Otranto, right? That's what I always reference there too.
So I was just the idea of a will and being left something or not being left something is so much of a catalyst for various elements of Gothic plots. And again, the cryptic meaning of Dumbledore can't come out and write, I want Harry, Ron, and Hermione to have these things for these specific reasons, so he has to be sneaky and cryptic about it.
Interesting. I was thinking about houses, but for some reason I suspected some sort of residence to be involved in Dumbledore's will, and it wasn't.
Oh,
So
we were going to get another like grim old place like manor
I thought
house.
maybe, I don't know, he's got
Someone write that
probably an
fan
ex
fiction. I like that idea.
there we go. I felt like, an extensive, I don't know, I had it was less grand than I thought it would be. I mean, I'm sure, but also knowing that this is all going to, have meaning eventually because it's Dumbledore. But yeah, I just kind of expected there to be a little bit more.
Alrighty then, and then we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And the card I picked at random, I'm pulling a lot of sword cards recently.
Yeah, you
So
are. Yeah.
this time I pulled out the King of Swords.
Well, hopefully that one's better than the last two have been. They've been pretty
Because
bad
the Nine
news.
and Ten of Swords suck. So the King of Swords is a symbol of intellectual power and authority and has the courage and intellect to achieve all that he desires. When this card appears in a tarot reading, you are in your power, ruling from a place of authority and respect. You stand firm in your truth and express yourself with a deep conviction. As a result, others pay attention to what you have to say. The King of Swords indicates that you have a clarity of mind and can perceive the truth, so it is up to you to take the lead with providing an objective point of view, making decisions based on impartial judgment. You are well positioned to judge your situation appropriately and identify any limiting behaviors getting in the way. You are also masterful at keeping your emotions in check while you draw upon your intellectual power and mental clarity to ascertain the truth. You cut straight to the point and get to the heart of the matter for maximum efficiency and impact. While you may worry that you are not being particularly caring or sympathetic with others, this detachment is what you need most right now. Maybe a certain Albus Wulfric Percival Brian Dumbledore?
Bob, Sally, Joe, Dumbledore. It made me think of Aunt Muriel and just her kind of like no regard for anybody's emotion. She was just like, this is what actually happened. Like, I don't care, I mean, granted, Harry wasn't presenting as Harry, but obviously she felt pretty excited to kind of like, just talk trash in front of his friend who wrote his obituary. I mean, that's probably not somebody that means nothing to another person.
Because Miro, because she does bring actual facts, like, or what can be verifiable. Like, she's saying, like, I know that Ariana never dealt with St. Mungo's in terms of, an illness. So we know that much. We don't know if she was a squib. Like, we don't know any of that. We don't know if Ariana killed. She's just throwing all that shit in as pure conjecture. So yeah. So I think of, in terms of, because Muriel's first, like, he hushed all that up. He never talked about it. And Doge is like, he was so devastated by Ariana's death. That's why he didn't talk about it. So kind of those elements, because the King of Swords, of course, the swords, suit in tarot compared to the cups, which is water, it's the element of air. It is the suit of intellect without, emotions and being able to be, and again, in some ways, rather cold and unfeeling. So there kind of is this sense of what Muriel's suggesting and what Harry's starting to think, that maybe there was this level of detachment that Dumbledore had with his family.
Is that an Aquarius card? Is that if like the astrology sign? I wonder what.
Yeah, well, Aquarius is an air sign.
Yeah.
The air signs in astrology are Aquarius, Libra, and Gemini.
Oh, Gemini. I don't know if I have anything.
All I can add is just the idea of this King of Swords is seen as this, you know, this paternal figure who is like considered to have the most wisdom and the most clarity. And for so long, that's how Harry and many other characters have viewed Dumbledore. And now finally that sort of pristine facade is being cracked.
Which you knew it was coming, but, you know, and I think, you know, maybe it was kind of there a little bit, but Harry just didn't want to hear it a little bit. I mean, he's always had his.
Possibly. And to be fair to Harry, like, Rita Skeeter is a very easy woman to brush off and call bullshit on based on his history with her. So that I think, you know, before he was dealing with a very unreliable, you know, person conveying the story. And so it was easy for him to shut down, you know, whatever. She's like, oh, that's such bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But now he's being in front of people who are old enough and were close enough to Dumbledore's. You know, that now he's seeing like, oh shit, there's actually something to this.
Right. Yeah. The flaw. He's flawed. Can you believe it? No. It's terrible.
Yeah. Alrighty then. The next one that I, from the Black Moon Astrology cards, is I pulled out card number 41, which is the North Node. Life's purpose.
So okay. What
is it? It's number 41. So let me pull out the little booklet. And Jared wants to go out again. Okay, leave me.
It's I'm okay.
Katie Butler.
Aww.
Such a fussy kitty. So let's see. Card 41. So the North Node points out the best areas for us to direct our talents and our wills. When the North Node card presents itself in a reading, you can be assured destiny has a place in your situation. Through many life lessons, you are about to arrive at a place for your highest good. Your life is expanding and opportunities pour in swiftly, catching you quite by surprise. This card also represents past life memories and karmic connections.
All right.
I think of the items that Dumbledore leaves to Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
Absolutely. That makes so much sense.
Because you know it's going to be useful to them at some point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. They can't make, like, yes. Yes.
You may meet people with whom you have known over multiple past lives, perhaps in a soul family where bonds form very quickly. You are taking on a larger view of your life, which not only emphasizes your talents, but aligns your talents with like-minded souls. It's a fortuitous time to begin a privately owned business or other professional venture. I don't know. That just kind of makes me think of, you know, just Harry and Ron, Hermione consolidating their next chapter in life, which is this very dangerous project of Horcrux hunting.
Yeah, and they're not going back to Hogwarts. It's just like, I don't know. But like-minded souls kind of finding each other. Obviously, they kind of did that a long time ago. So.
Ooh. What you just said of they're leaving Hogwarts, like, this energy is now telling you that the schooling part is over for now. Lessons have been learned, and you are now to act on these lessons towards a greater destiny.
Much like Harry Potter, I am psychic. Much like, Trelawney. No.
Indeed. Alrighty then. Good stuff. And then we move on to our final exercise. Fan fiction time.
This did not have lots of careful thoughts, so I apologize. But my kind of what if is, you know, what if there was that conversation about Dumbledore, but it was continued to be positive. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he's got this sister, this shadiness. It's like, oh yeah, he's a great guy, you know, whatever. The secrets were less sinister. Like, what if he had like a hidden family of like kids or something like that, which maybe he does. I don't know, but this is kind
there
of
are so, darker. There are so many fanfics with Dumbledore relatives.
I don't doubt it. Like, that's he's a character that is rich with, you know, stories coming out.
I once wrote a fanfic where my OC character was related to Voldemort on her father's side and related to Dumbledore on her mother's side.
Whoa, I like that. It's pretty badass. I like that. Very yes. Thronesy. But no, yeah, that's, I mean, that's, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, one of my fan fictions was, of course, because you know I'm shipping Hermione and Victor Krum hard. What if they yes. were united and hit it off again? And Ron did not have his fail safe way charms witch's book and he was powerless to stop it.
I thought it was going that way. I really did think we were going to have to go through another, like, love you know, triangle. Like, I guess, yes, and, you know, watch enough shows, read Twilight. I don't know. Love Triangle's not unique to Twilight, but I, for a second, thought, like, oh, gosh, please don't do this. I don't like that trope at all. So there I thought that's where it was going.
There is only one YA book I've ever read where I was emotionally invested in a love triangle, because I usually hate that trope. But this one writer did it in such a good manner, and with for all the circumstances and everything going on in the story, that I couldn't decide who I wanted to be with who. Like, the only author book I know that did the trope well was, I'm looking at my bookshelf now, and it's Three Dark Crowns.
Oh yeah, you've told me to read that. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that now is
the only love triangle trope that was done well in a fantasy series.
Then I might have to read it, because it usually drives me nuts. I mean, in Twilight, I was totally Edward. Like, no question. I did not care about Jacob. So, that makes sense. I mean, look at us. But I like that. I don't know. I really did think that's where it was going. So I was a little surprised it didn't go that direction. Mm-hmm. But I like that.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. A lot of my fanfics, what ifs, tend to involve Krum, because he's an awesome character, and I think secretly he's very smart. What if he started a brawl with Luna's father just at the wedding?
Well, I guess then we would have started the kind of like descent into darkness that much earlier, because I feel like I guess I haven't been at a wedding where people got into a fight, unfortunately. Maybe I'll be lucky one day.
You make me think of was it at Daenerys's weddings, like, a Dothraki wedding without at least three deaths is considered a dull affair.
Yes, that's fun. You know, that makes, so would it have caused Harry to blow his cover in some capacity? Like, if it would have gotten a little out of control, and what would the repercussions of that have been?
Possibly, because we don't know. Because maybe the just being distracted by the fight and breaking up the fight, he's not taking his apologies potion. He's just and then he starts transforming back into his self. And Krum is like, yeah. Harry, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what if that happened? Mm. I don't know. That's a good one, though. That's good, fun to think about.
I have another one. Why doesn't Harry just tell Ginny about the Horcruxes and take her with them?
I don't know. Do you think he's like trying to protect her a little bit? Well, I feel like he's got a little bit, of course,
what he's trying to do. And I've read fan fictions where he does tell her and she ends up being very helpful.
Well, see, he's missing an opportunity is what he's doing. She's a smart gal. She's also not prone to tears, apparently. So
my sister's no shade to anyone who is not a crier. I just am a crier. Like, even though I'm a Taurus, which is an earth sign, like, my most dominant element after earth is water. I am definitely a crier.
I'm a Cancer. I mean, like, there's
you're more than me.
Yes. Yeah. That's just kind of like, you see Cancer cry. Missed opportunity. Harry's being a dumb boy in this situation. He's missing an opportunity.
And the way the Brits, he's being a noble prat.
A noble prat. That's a better way to say a dumb boy.
It's funny. Yeah, because he thinks he has to shoulder everything himself, and not thinking that, if people divide the burden equally, then it's less of a hassle on everyone.
There's some managers that could take that part too, that I know.
But Alrighty then, and thus concludes this week's episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time where I only have to read one of the chapters because I already read chapter 9,
there you
A
go.
Place to Hide, and chapter 10, Creature's Tale.
Ooh.
What does Creature know?
I guess we'll find out.
Yes, we shall. Alrighty then, catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.